expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, live online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. While you're at my website, don't forget to check out the free weekly newsletter. We get about 20, maybe 30 pieces of original content a week that we send out with links on that newsletter. So when you sign up for it, you get to get all of the insight from ThinkLink and all the other places that we publish, like Money Watch, Equifax Finance Blog, all kinds of other places online that we're doing some work, and you'll be able to get it all right from the ThinkLink newsletter. On top of that, we did something interesting this week. We launched with one story, the ThinkLink Espanol version, which I hope you'll find of interest. We've been getting more and more requests for translating some of our content. As many of you know, my husband, Sam, was born and raised in Mexico, and he decided that we would translate some of these stories into Spanish. And so our very first story is up, Fraud de Crédito. And I'm not going to trouble you with the rest of what that is, but it's a story about credit fraud and what you can do about it, identity theft, and so we would love for you to go and check that out. And if you know people who are Spanish-speaking and would be interested in getting some of this great advice in Spanish, please send them our way. Let us know you'd like more stories and what topics, and we will do our best to get them translated for you. And for everybody else, there's like 8,000 pages of content at thinklink.com. Our number today, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I thought we'd start with the economy, as usual. It's our sort of our morning check-in. And it was sort of an interesting week, wasn't it? We ended up where the Dow was up a little bit. It was down on Friday, but overall, market was up a little bit. It ended at 12,422. We had a very big, significant drop early on with the Dow trading. And when we look at, you know, sort of what's been going on all over the place with Europe and with Asia, I guess it's not all that surprising. There's some really smart investors and money managers out there who are thinking that there could be some troubles. And that sector where you're getting, like Tiffany, which was just going gangbusters the last couple of years, and all of us were kind of scratching our heads going, really? Tiffany had a drop in year-to-year sales. So there seems to, you know, where you decide to put your money, you know, I don't know that any one place is safe. Some people are really thinking that you'd want to focus on companies and sectors with earnings visibility, right? So they're making money, non-cyclical characteristics, so not housing, and a demonstrated ability to provide dividend yields with payout growth. So, in other words, something that's just a little bit more stable. Now, when we look at what's going on with earnings, we're already seeing that some of the announcements that are coming out are lower. Banking industry is looking lower. In fact, a bunch of people are going to get fired, in the next couple of weeks. We've got fourth quarter earnings seasons really starting this week. And originally, everybody thought that you would see, a huge fourth quarter. And now I think everybody's kind of backed off of that. But, you know, we'll see how many companies start to miss estimates and what that really means. So for some people like Dave Rosenberg of Glusk & Scheff, he's in Canada, but watches over the American market for his investors. You know, he's a little bit concerned that European industrial production is roughly the same as it was 6 years ago, and it's appreciably lower than when it hit its peak in early 2008. We're seeing like a current spate of weakness in the Eurozone, and that started well before the new year. He doesn't see a quick end to that downturn, along with recession in Europe, that's 20% of the revenues of U.S. companies. He's worried about China. Even though oil is down around a little under 100, so it's down from its high, it's still really high. $100 a barrel is still pretty high. Reduced tax benefits, still higher employment costs, lower productivity. You know, he's just not so thrilled. And so and kind of begin to think about, well, where are things going? Now, one piece of news this week that I thought was sort of interesting is that the home builders are all excited again. Some of the big home building companies are actually believe that they're starting to see things turn around, and they're optimistic. But you know what? If you meet a real estate person and they're not optimistic, that's when you really get concerned. I mean, real estate builders, home builders, real estate salespeople, they are among the most optimistic people on the planet. They always think tomorrow's going to be the best day, or today's the best day to buy a house, to build a house. It's just how they're made up. And so the fact that they're more optimistic, well, they've been pretty optimistic at various points over the last 5 or 6 years, and they've been completely wrong. The other thing that's been sort of interesting, I hope, by the way, they're right this year, but who knows? The other thing that I thought was pretty interesting this week was the revelation of the Fed meeting notes from 5 years ago. So we get kind of a summary right after the Fed meets. But to actually get the transcripts of what they talked about, it takes 5 years. And the reason they do that is they don't really want to rock the world's markets by revealing what their inner sanctum conversations are. You could imagine just how damaging or scary that would be to markets. And so they wait 5 years, but everything is on the record. And what came out is that in 2006, the end of 2006, they didn't actually see at all the crash of the housing market coming. Not even close. The irrational exuberance from so many years ago was just like, oh, we see this as a normal setting. It's cyclical. It's, you know, they just missed it. Completely missed it. So I don't know if that's a huge surprise or not. The other thing, finally, that's sort of interesting, is how confused the federal housing officials and even the Fed is about why Atlanta housing prices in particular continue to drop as dramatically as they are. Many other places around the country, if you look at sort of annualized, and you take out the top 10 worst markets, so that would be like Atlanta, Arizona, Las Vegas, probably Chicago would fall into that category. I would imagine the entire state of Michigan. So you take out the top 10 markets, the picture of housing in this country looks significantly different. We always hear a national result quoted, but we don't often hear kind of where things are going well. And so, and I don't actually say well means we're not seeing a 10% housing drop, you know, price drop. So in many parts of the, let's say the top 20 biggest cities, you're still seeing housing prices fall maybe 1%, 1.5% year over year. But there are a lot of markets where things have stabilized, and even some other markets where you're starting to see growth of, you know, maybe 1% to 2% per year. Anything positive is big right now, right? Because we've just been seeing big negatives for year over year. But this top 10 market idea is really dragging down housing. And everybody's kind of scratching their heads going, well, now we're in this kind of downward cycle where the lower price of all these foreclosures and the ones that have yet to come on the market, which in Atlanta there are plenty, by the way, are just dragging down the prices for everybody else. And we're in a downward spiral, and how do you stop that? And I think this is one reason that the Fed has decided that they're going to continue to buy mortgage-backed securities and that they're going to continue to try and pump the market up, and they're going to continue to try and keep mortgage interest rates low. How low? Well, on a property that we have that is a condo in downtown Chicago, the interest rate just dropped. It's an adjustable, and the interest rate just dropped to, I want to say, 2.85%. Basically, that's about the margin. So it tells you that the underlying interest rate is zero or near zero. Maybe it's a tenth of a percent, and this is now 2.85%. This is not an interest rate you can get, anybody out there. So if you're listening, don't call the show and go, where did you get that interest rate? We're in our fourth or fifth or sixth year of a 5-1 adjustable rate mortgage. And so now this interest rate just kind of adjusts on an annual basis. So it was a good deal for us when we did it. It's still a good deal. And there are a lot of people, though, who have been emailing me that their interest rates are going down. If you have a LIBOR loan, London Interbank Bank rate, what you're probably seeing is that your interest rate might have ticked up just a little bit. LIBOR, because it's tied to Europe and London and what's going on there, might have ticked up a little bit for you. But interest rates are still low. The Fed is pushing them even lower. And there seems to be a divergence between the stock markets from around the world, which, you know, went down 5 to 25% this year, and what's been going on in the U.S. marketplace. So more to come on this, but very, very interesting overall. We'll just have to see what happens this year. 404-872-0750 is our number if you'd like to comment on that. If you have questions for me, delighted to help out today. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's go to the phones. Linda joins us on the line. Hey, Linda, welcome to the program.
Hi, Elise. I had called in a couple of weeks ago about pool insurance slash credit enhancement on my mortgage that I can't seem to get off.
A Freddie Mac loan?
Yes. Yes. Well, anyway, I did what you told me to do, and I'm just calling to find out if you have any more status on how to get it off my mortgage so I could refinance.
I don't. Freddie Mac has been really quiet on why a whole group of loans were pooled.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if this is on advice of their historian, Newt Gingrich, or maybe this is on the advice of their... I don't know if you caught that story about Newt.
Uh-huh.
Or this is on the advice of their lawyers,
uh-huh.
But there's definitely more to this story, and I have not been able to uncover it yet for you. I mean, they're like, well, we just took it upon ourselves to pool these loans together. And you have to ask yourself, why did they do that?
Right.
Was it a red line situation? And I mean red line not in the location base, but were there some characteristics about who applied for these loans, and they just decided these loans,
uh-huh.
they needed to buy this insurance?
Uh-huh.
Is it who they sold it to?
Uh-huh.
You know, because they pool all these loans together and then they sell them to investors. Did the investors require it
uh-huh.
for some way, for some reason? What is the answer? And we just simply, they've stonewalled us. We've simply not gotten an answer from anybody at Freddie Mac about this. But, you know, as always, if Freddie Mac is listening, I am open to hearing about it.
So we
really don't have it. But my sense of it is that I'm not sure how anybody is going to get this off of. They also say they're working on it.
Uh-huh.
So if any, you know, I don't think individually, Linda, you're going to be able to get this off your loan.
So I'm just stuck with it, and then being stuck means I can't ever refinance it.
No, you could do a traditional refinance, but you wouldn't qualify for the Making Home Affordable.
Right, and they want me to bring at least $40,000 to the table because I'm underwater.
Correct.
Okay. Can I ask another question?
Sure.
Okay, I'm getting married next year, and I have two rental properties that are doing real well, and my home that I live in is paid for. My husband wants to buy a new home on his VA loan. Would you advise me to sell my home since I've already paid for it? I tried to just rent it out.
He wants to buy, okay, so you already own two homes. You own three homes.
Right. Two are being rented, and the one I live in is paid for.
Okay, and so you don't have any mortgage on it.
Right.
So which property do you have the Freddie Mac loan on?
One of the rental properties.
Okay, I just have to tell you that I'm not sure you'd be able to use any of the Making Home Affordable.
No, that has nothing to do with it at all. This is just a separate issue.
No, I know, but I'm getting back to your other question for a moment.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure that rental properties would qualify. Maybe they will and maybe they won't.
Uh-huh.
There seems to be some differential there. I'm giving you another piece of information based on information you just gave me.
Oh, okay.
That's all that's happening here. That it may not qualify for those Making Home Affordable loans because you're so underwater.
Okay.
But that said, let's go to your new home. So do you want to move into this new home with your future husband?
Yes.
Okay. So you could sell your home.
Uh-huh.
He can buy this VA loan if he hasn't used up his VA.
No, he's never used it.
So he could buy it. I'm not sure why he'd want to, though.
Want to buy what?
With a VA.
I don't understand.
Why would he want to use... Okay, the VA is not necessarily the cheapest way to get a loan.
Okay.
So maybe he doesn't realize that. Maybe he hasn't shopped it around. But to get a 0% loan, which is what VA was always really good for,
uh-huh.
it's a very expensive proposition. You're going to pay like 3%, 2 or 3% on top of, you know, there's other fees that go into it. It's a higher, sometimes higher interest rate.
Okay.
So if he wants to get a 0% loan,
uh-huh.
he ought to look at a USDA loan, depending on where he wants to buy it.
Okay.
And for much of Atlanta, the metro Atlanta area,
uh-huh.
a USDA loan would you'd qualify for a USDA loan, which can be a 0% loan, and it may be a little bit less expensive way
uh-huh.
than going with a VA loan.
Uh-huh.
So
okay.
There's more information that I think he has to answer about why he wants to use a VA. And then the next question is, do you just want to rent out the home you've already paid for and get that cash flow, or do you want to sell that home and just because you are two rental properties is enough, or you don't think you can rent this property or whatever it is? That's a separate question.
Yes.
You also, I would just advise you, and I'm sure you've already thought about this, you really need to think about how you're going to structure your finances and if you need a prenup or not, because you already have a significant amount of wealth that you've accumulated. You're marrying this person, and you may want to think about how you're going to protect yourself financially just in case things don't work out, or even if they do. 404-872-0750, 22 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
So I'm back to the velvet.
27 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. We'll be giving away our prize pack coming up in about 25 minutes here on News Talk WSB, so stay tuned for that. If you're not following me on Twitter, you might want to do that. We're chatting online at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. So you get a lot of information that way as well. And don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter over at thinkglink.com. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online, thinkglink.com. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about what is going on in Europe. France was downgraded this week, and Sarkozy has promised to reform. Okay. Find that. Let's get going with that plan. There's also some other economic news coming out this week. It's a big week for housing, and we're going to want to talk about it. 27 minutes past the hour. We're going to take your questions next on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
Six minutes past the hour. Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays, 11 to 1, here on News Talk WSB. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. So, looking at the news this week, it was kind of interesting. We saw that France was downgraded. Its debt rating was downgraded. In general, Europe has been downgraded. We haven't seen Germany downgraded. That would be sort of the last fall. But there's been plenty of other stuff going on. We're also seeing that there are some companies that look like they're not having as good a year. And so in the banking industry, J.P. Morgan's profit fell 23% in the fourth quarter, which is very big. And Chase is setting aside large sums to fight lawsuits related to poorly written mortgages during the real estate boom. Bank of America, which is, I guess, according, if you just look at deposits, Bank of America is the largest lender, well, bank right now. They've told U.S. regulators they are willing to retreat from some parts of the country if their financial problems deepen. Which is sort of interesting. Bank of America has spent maybe billions, I don't know, millions and millions of dollars finding customers, and maybe even hundreds of millions. And the idea that they're going to sell branches and lose customers that they spent all this money to find is a really significant sign that they are feeling the pain of this extended recessionary period that we're in. According to the Wall Street Journal, among 7,400 U.S. banks and savings institutions, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, and Wells Fargo are the only coast-to-coast banks. They're only truly national banks. And there's just been this long acquisition over the years as banks have tried to build and build and build. And it seems as though, things aren't quite going that well for them. Retail sales is another problem. We saw that December retail sales did inch up from November, but they're way up from a year ago, but it's still kind of sluggish. In fact, U.S. according to the Journal, U.S. retail sales almost stalled in December. They rose a slight 0.1% in December from November, so the third consecutive month of slower growth, putting the silver lining on it, of course. But what you're seeing is that sales of cars and auto parts, while those have surged, gas, food, electronics, and department store sales all declined. And if you exclude autos, the value of all sales fell by 0.2% to 0.2% from November. It's the first drop since May of 2010. So we have to kind of think about what that means as we go into this presidential election year. People are still unemployed for a long period of time, and people who have gotten jobs are making less money than they used to. Many people are making less money. Not everybody, of course. It's hard to generalize with 325 million people, but it's interesting to think about how this is changing, how our economy is changing. You know, we've had substantial shifts in our economy before, and it's taken years for that to all get sorted out. We're now in this midst, in the midst of a huge shift to a service economy, of which we service a lot of U.S., not as much, you know, international. And what does that say about farm jobs? What does that say about manufacturing jobs? You know, there are some, yes, there are some cases of companies that are coming back from Canada saying it's cheaper to manufacture here in the U.S. That's great. Good news. But overall, what does that say about what we're doing and how we're going to be self-sustaining as we go through this next great shift? And how are we all going to make our livings from that? And how are we going to save and provide a better future for our children and our grandchildren? Which, of course, is the essence of the American dream. So, all interesting things to think about this year. 404-872-0750 is our number. Happy to help you out. Let's go back to the phones. Mickey joins us on the line from Decatur. Hi, Mickey. Welcome to the Elise Glink Show.
Hi, Elise. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind today?
Well, you actually helped me about a little over a year ago to obtain a modification, so I wanted to say thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm glad that worked out.
Yes, but of course things are still not going great. My credit card debt is drowning me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I listen to you and I listen to Clark and I listen to Dave Ramsey, and everybody seems to have sort of a different thing to say. I was wondering if it's what are the pros and cons of bankrupting out on that debt.
Well, let me ask you a question first. How much money are we talking about in your credit cards altogether? How much?
$40,000.
Okay. How much do you earn in a year?
Probably like $20,000.
Okay. So, Credibility, which is the former Consumer Credit Counseling Services of Greater Atlanta, would say that if you owe twice what you're earning, you'll never dig your way out of that.
It's been going on for years and years, and I've been, you know, it's been a slow burn where I've tried to make payments, but, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Okay, it's not working, and it mathematically, Mickey, it can't work.
Right.
It just can't work. And so that makes that, and I don't really know what Clark and Dave Ramsey say about that situation, but I will tell you from my years of working on an advisory committee with Credibility and being involved with their people and their counselors, who are excellent, by the way, and I think you should go just talk to their counselors just to get another sense. And if you decide to file bankruptcy, you're going to need to get some bankruptcy counseling for the bankruptcy court. But if you earn 20 and you owe 40, mathematically, that's not going to ever work out. So
right.
Now we have to figure out what to do. And what I think you should do is you should probably file for bankruptcy and dump all of this debt.
Okay.
Now, you're going to need a bankruptcy attorney. You're going to need bankruptcy filing fees. It's not something you really can do on your own. And you're going to go through the process. You've already got your modification, which is great. Hopefully you're making those payments on time. If you stop making your credit card payments, that's going to help.
Right.
And you really need to figure out how you're going to manage this going forward. But I can guarantee that once you dump these credit cards and the other debts that you may be carrying, medical debts perhaps, whatever it is, you'll retain your mortgage and you will start to sleep at night. Because my guess is you're not sleeping so well.
No, not really.
I bet like to get about 7 hours a night, right?
Yeah, I get close to that, I guess.
Okay.
It's been a slow burn, so I think at first I wasn't getting sleep, but now it's kind of, oh, well. I guess my main question is, like Dave Ramsey says, well, just let the credit, you know, they say they're going to sue me and this and that. And Dave Ramsey says, well, just let them sue you because you can't pay it anyway.
Well, you could let them sue you, but what's going to happen, and I'm not a lawyer, I just am married to one.
Right.
What's going to happen is that the first people across the line are going to start garnishing your wages.
Okay.
So I don't think you want that.
No, I don't.
And I don't really like reactive situations where you are reacting to somebody else rather than being proactive.
I
think when you're proactive, you get to control more of what's going to happen to you. So,
okay, I see.
If you file for bankruptcy, you control more or less what's going to happen, and it won't dump all of your debt, but it'll probably, given the ratio of your income to your credit card debt, it'll probably dump almost all of it, or maybe you'll still end up having $5,000. But $5,000 instead of $40,000 is much more doable.
Exactly, yeah.
And then you can structure
it out bad.
But I would much rather not see you start getting wage garnishments. That just is not good. So I think I would rather see you control the situation.
Okay.
And when they sue you, let's say for some reason the paperwork gets lost and you don't go to the summons and you don't answer the summons, that creates a whole other issue. So again, I believe in being proactive. And so that, let me suggest you start with a visit to Credibility.
Okay.
Credibility.com. You can set up an appointment online, go in and talk to their counselors, do it online, do it over the phone, whatever's easiest for you. And I'd like you to just run your situation by them. They're very, very smart, and they do a lot of work helping you sort of look at your budget and just, you know, but I know what they're going to say. You owe 40, you earn 20. That's not doable. I don't even think they would accept you in their debt repayment plan, you know, right?
Oh,
you wouldn't even be accepted into a debt management plan because you're just so out of whack. So they would probably say, have you thought about bankruptcy? And you could talk to one of their bankruptcy counselors. And try and figure that out, and then you'll have to find a bankruptcy lawyer.
Okay.
So I don't know if this gives you some clarification, but I think that's the direction that you're going to want to go in.
Okay, yeah, it does give me clarification because I'm just, like I said, I've been sort of in a slow burn trying to make payments, you know, but then I pay this credit card and not that one, and then they start coming breathing on me, so I switch over. And
well, you've just... Your credit's already shot anyway, so you might as well get a clean start.
Low sixes now.
I think in a year from now, a year after you file and get out of bankruptcy, I think you're going to just have a whole different perspective on it.
Great.
All right?
Great. I appreciate your help.
You're welcome, Mickey. Let me know what happens. 47 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Tommy joins us on the line from Dallas. Hi, Tommy.
Hi, Lee.
How's it going?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me. It's the most informative show I've heard this morning.
Oh, well, I'm delighted you joined us then. What can I do to answer your question?
I listened to you mention LIBOR.
Uh-huh.
And I'm currently in a 7-1 ARM at 5.25% interest. That's due in July.
Yeah.
And I've been investigating that HARP program, getting on the low rates. However, I don't know if I should feel pressured to refi now or gamble that the LIBOR rate in July will still be a reasonable enough rate that I can lock in a rate for one more year and possibly do the HARP program next year.
Well, here's the problem with the HARP, which is, for everybody else listening, is the Home Affordable Refinance Program. I don't know that you qualify. Is your loan a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac?
I've already pre-qualified for it with a mortgage company.
Great. So I would try really hard to see if you could refinance that. I think LIBOR, and we have another loan on a different property that's a rental property that's a LIBOR, and it actually ticked up. So the people who have LIBORs are going to see them tick up. So if your loan, but because you're at 5.25%, it may drop from there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because
right.
It's still below that. So I think our LIBOR ticked up.
Well, from what I saw today, it was at 1.13.
Right.
And
so what's your...
A year ago, it was about 0.78, which isn't that much of a tick up to me.
No, it's not. But what's your margin on your loan? Do you know?
No idea.
So let's just say it's 3%. So if it's 3% and it's
2.25, I'm sorry.
It's 2.25? So, mm-hmm. And what did you say? It was 1.78?
Yes.
So let's just say 1.75 and 2.25 would mean your loan, unless we're missing something, would go down from 5.25% to 4%.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
And that buys you time.
Right.
But the real question is, are you way underwater?
No, about 15,000 or so.
So what would you get from the HARP program? What would your loan rate go to?
I think about 4.78 was the best quote I got. That was with a nothing down, everything paid for, supposedly.
Yeah. So here's my problem. 4.75% is an amazing long-term rate. It's not as long as low as it could be, but you're underwater. If you wanted to put down $20,000, $25,000 and get yourself right side up, I think you could probably get a 15-year at 3.25%.
Yes.
So
that's what I was looking at also, yeah.
I always think that that's the better move if you have the cash.
Okay.
So I went from a 30-year 5-1 ARM at 3%, and then I'm sure you've heard me talk over the, you know, however long you've been listening. You know, we started at like 4.75%, thought it was amazing, went to 4%, thought it was amazing, and finally ended up in another 15-year at 3.25%.
That's even more amazing.
It's even more amazing. And I'm telling you, we are never refinancing again. But I keep saying that because how could we imagine such an amazing rate? So all I would say to you is, you know, there is... you know, at some point in time, it's a game of chicken, right?
Yep.
And I just feel like these are amazing rates. You're never going to, unless you're really lucky, you're never going to get the lowest. But you can always keep refinancing once you're above water. And you're close enough that you could probably get to an interesting place. If not, 4.875% locked in long term is a great opportunity simply because 4.875% is an amazing opportunity. What would they give you if you refinanced down to a 15-year? Instead of a 30-year, maybe that would take you down to 4.25%. If you could get 4.25% being underwater, not putting in anything other than closing costs, that's an amazing rate you might want to take. 404-872-0750, 51 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back to answer more of your questions next on News Talk WSB.
Expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
56 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink, 404-872-0750. Let's take one quick call. Louise joins us on the line from Marietta. Hey, Louise, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you.
Sure. What's on your mind?
I am a widow who will be relocating out of state. I was not planning to list my home until spring, but a neighbor put their friend in touch with me, and they would like to purchase my home.
How fantastic for you!
Yes, I believe so.
That's great.
And the best thing is that I really like these people. I would like to leave my home with them.
That's so great. And are you? Do you have a mortgage on the property?
Yes, I have about a $70,000 mortgage right now.
Uh-huh. And how much is the house worth?
I've had two brokers here before these people approached me to appraise it, and they have come up with $250,000.
Excellent. You're not going to have a problem there. So what's your question? Because it sounds like you have a buyer. They've given you a good price? And
no, we haven't discussed price yet.
Okay.
They have just called to say they're interested in purchasing.
Okay. But would you be happy with $250,000?
Yes, I think in view of the economy, I will.
Okay.
Normally, in another economy, I wouldn't, but yeah.
Okay, well, it's a tough world out there. So quickly, what is your question? Because we're about to go to a commercial.
Uh-huh. What is the best way for me to proceed with this sale, protecting myself?
Okay, the first thing I want you to do is you need to hire a real estate attorney. You don't need to have a broker involved.
Uh-huh.
So you're going to save all that money. You're going to use some of it to hire a real estate attorney who will prepare all the documents.
Uh-huh.
You can find a real estate attorney through the Atlanta Bar Association.
Okay.
Just call and ask for the head of the real estate committee. Then what you need to do is go back and say, okay, I've had two brokers. They tell me the house is worth $250,000. That's, you know, how does that work for you? And see what they say. And hopefully what they're going to say is, that's a pretty good price. Or they may come back and say, what about $225,000? And you have to decide what you'll be willing to take. And then the attorney will arrange for the closing, hire a closing agent, title insurance, whatever else you have to do to get you on your way. But you need a little help. So an attorney is the place that you go. So congratulations, Louise. That's the best home sale story I've heard all year. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
I don't want no damage. How am I gonna manage you?
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show. It is 7 minutes past 12. So happy to have you here today on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB. Our number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, thinkglink.com. Go there, sign up for the free weekly newsletter. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter. I was tweeting earlier this during last hours of the show. We'll probably get back there again. My Twitter handle is at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. So happy to have you there as well. I have a Facebook page. We're all online. We're everywhere. Everywhere you want to be. 404-872-0750. I think we're going to go back to the phones. There's a whole bunch of people waiting. We want to help some people out today. John joins us on the line from Peachtree City. Hi, John.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great, great. I have a couple rental properties, and one does not have a loan, and one has a 4%, and one has 5 7/8.
Okay, those are amazing interest rates.
Yeah, while I was on hold, I was thinking the one is underwater, so I can't refinance. That was my original thought. But
is that the 5 7/8?
It is. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it would probably be pretty tough. Although there are some lenders that are doing refinancings of rental properties,
mm-hmm,
if they're underwater, but they're few and far between, to be perfectly honest.
I'm cash flow positive on it. I'd probably just leave it where it is. But the one without a mortgage, what would you consider putting a mortgage on that?
Why?
Just to lock in some money. I don't know.
Well, you could do a cash out refinance, maybe. That's pretty hard to do right now in a rental property.
Okay.
You might be able to get a home equity loan of line of credit, for example, if you needed to do work on the house. But, you know, you're kind of in a good spot there. There are a lot of people who call the show who would be very happy not to have a loan on rental property at the moment.
Yeah, I just thought since the rates were so low that to lock in that money. But
if you have a use for it, like if you said to me, Elise, I want to buy another property and I want to get some money on it, great. Or I want to take this loan that's underwater and make it come at least neutral, and then refinance that one down, then I understand it a little bit better. But you're not really locking in profits, right?
Right.
Because when you sell, you now have a mortgage you have to pay off.
And I have some cash that had another question about. I had some cash just sitting there, and I was deciding whether to buy another house, too. So,
well, it's a great time to buy rental property. It's probably going to be the best time. These few years have been the best time in, you know, several generations, like 40, 60 years,
right,
to buy rental properties. Because you're buying at an unbelievably low price. And even if the price falls another 10%, let's hope that doesn't happen. Even if it does, and you're buying for a 10 or a 20-year cycle, who cares? Eventually, the property is going to go up in value, and you'll have bought in at a very low, you know, very low interest rate, a very low price.
Okay.
But you're going to need, when you buy rental property today, they're going to require 30, maybe as much as 30-35% down. So if you buy a $50,000 or $100,000 property, that's, you know, you better figure out how much cash you need to actually buy that property.
Yeah, I was thinking of just doing a property again, cash. Just, mm-hmm, want to just buy something that I have cash and just, you know, stay below that that line.
So the only thing I would say there is if you buy with cash, I'm not, you know, that sort of puts you in the situation that you're already asking me about, which is getting a loan in the aftermarket. So I would guess I would run the numbers both ways. One where you're putting down, let's say, even 40 or 50%, and then you get a loan for 50%. So if you buy a $100,000 property, it's a $50,000 or $60,000 loan. Little hard to get anything less than that. Or buying it all in cash and what that does for your cash flow, and all the rest of it.
Okay, then I'm in the same position. That might be a better way to go, put down 50%.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with you. I don't think property prices are falling down 50%. So, you know, from where they are now, at least, God, I hope that is not the case. But I think that could be a more moderate way to go. And then you don't have to worry so much about this property that's sort of all in cash. That's kind of your reserve. That's if something really goes wrong and you need to sell property, you can sell that one because you don't have a loan on it.
Worst case, almost like a...
it's an insurance policy.
Yeah, okay. Well, I love your show. Thanks for your time.
Hey, thanks so much for saying that, and thanks for dropping by this Sunday morning. Stay tuned. 12 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Cynthia joins us on the line all the way from North Carolina. Hi, Cynthia.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good. I got a letter from a nationwide law center called Home Affordable Mortgage Program.
Uh-huh.
And I called them, and they want to restructure my mortgage debt. I want to know if they're a legitimate company.
Well, I don't know if they're a legitimate company. You'd have to look them up. I don't have any firsthand knowledge of them.
Well, how would I find out?
Well, okay, let's start with Home Affordable Mortgage Program is a legitimate program. That's HAMP, and
right,
it's from the
right.
Making Home Affordable people. And you don't need them. You don't need them to restructure your loan, whoever called you. So that would be my first thing.
Well, they didn't call me. They sent me a letter, and then I called them.
Okay. Well, you don't need them to go to HAMP. Right?
Okay.
You can do this on your own, or you can call the Hope for Homeowners program, which is the one that's listed on the Making Home Affordable website. Have you been to that website yet?
No.
Okay. So if you go, are you in front of a computer?
Yes.
Okay. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov, and what you'll see is this is the center place from the Department of Housing and Urban Development and Treasury working together for HAMP, the Home Affordable Mortgage Program, the HARP, Home Affordable Refinance Program, and other programs. And so if you go to, on the top, there's a blue bar, and you go to Explore Programs, it says, do you want to lower your monthly payments, lower your interest rate if you're unemployed, if you have a second mortgage, if your home's value has fallen, if you leave your home, and how do you avoid foreclosure? And it gives you a chance to sort of look at all of the different programs and figure out how to get started. Now, if you go click on For Partners, what you see is a number at the top, and it's the Homeowners Hope Hotline. It's 888-995-HOPE. And they can be a gateway for you because all the lenders work with them. They're staffed by HUD-certified housing counselors. They help you understand your options. They help you prepare the application. They help you work directly with your mortgage company.
So now, other people are just lawyers that would be a middleman.
Yeah, and they're going to want like $1,500 to $5,500 bucks. And they won't be able to do anything for you that you can't do yourself.
Okay, great.
So the reason I've taken you through this process of going to the website is because if a number is on a government website, that's the place you want to try first.
Okay, that makes sense.
So why don't you start there? There's a lot of good information on this website. I'm not saying that just because you go through them, it's automatically going to happen. There's all kinds of hoops you have to get over, but some of those are listed on the site, so you get, at least are going to get some understanding about how this process works, and then call the 888-995-HOPE number.
I'm looking at it right now.
Great, and start there.
Okay.
And I would rip up that letter from the lawyers.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling the show. 16 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Joel joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Joel.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. You know, I actually was listening to your program, and for the first time, and it sounds, I'm really happy that I get to talk to you about my budgeting question.
Okay.
I've lived paycheck to paycheck my whole life, and then I got married, and then now we live paycheck to paycheck. And, you know, we've not been conservative. We borrowed when we needed money. We maxed out our student loans because we wanted a nicer lifestyle. And we're lucky enough that nothing exploded and we didn't, you know, get in trouble by living outside of our means. And our incomes have grown, so we've been able to sort of keep up with credit card payments and student loan payments. And now we just bought a house. And so
wow.
You know, the payments, I know, we're really lucky.
You are really lucky. Any one of these things could have exploded with a big kaboom, and you would have all your house of cards would have come down.
We've been playing financial minesweeper for I don't know how long, but you know, I kind of feel like our incomes are increasing. We're in a position where we might actually be able to get a handle on it if we were to be more conservative and to. We were thinking about starting a family, you know.
Oh, just, good. Pile that on, too. That's great.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing about it is my wife just got a new job, and we went out and we bought her some clothes, you know, to sort of fit the life, the style, whatever. And it occurs to me that I don't know if we can even afford those clothes. It just, I know that at the end of the month, if we have enough money left over, then we could have. But I'm not convinced that that's the way to live my life, so... I'd
like
turn it over to you.
Well, I'd like to say that that is definitely not the way you want to live your life, because you have been incredibly lucky, but there will be a time when your luck runs out.
Yeah.
It'll either run out in a way that's a good thing, right? Your wife has a baby and decides she has to stay at home and raise the baby and you lose her income.
Right.
So that's, I would call that a very amazing reason, but that's your luck running out right there. Because half your income, perhaps, will be gone. Or even a third. Whatever it is, it's too much for you to handle. And so I think you, before you start this family, you want to get your financial life in order. And so one thing you can do is you can go to Credibility, which is Consumer Credit Counseling Services of Greater Atlanta, and you can make an appointment for free budget counseling. And you should do that, because anytime you can get something for free that's that good and has such high quality, you should do it.
That's great.
So it's credibility.org. Now, once in a while on the show, we spend a lot of time talking about ways to save money, and people save money in the most amazing ways. A woman called in, and she said, this was my all-time favorite, she said that they really liked going out to dinner, but they instituted a no-drink rule. No drinks for the kids, no drinks for them. No wine, no beer, no mixed cocktails, no sodas, nothing. And in a year, they saved $10,000.
That's great.
So it's everything from that to living in a slightly cooler house in the winter and a slightly warmer house in the summer.
Sweaters are cheaper, eh?
I think you guys should, to start, you want to write down absolutely everything you spend in a given month. And you want to start that, I would do it on Mint.com or buy a copy of Quicken and do it on Quicken and start keeping track of your finances. Mint is kind of good. It was bought by the people who make Quicken. And you can also get a whole snapshot of your financial life because you'll... it'll pull in all the data from your bank accounts and your credit card accounts, and everything will be in one place. And I think that's a very smart thing for you.
Start
tracking what you're spending. Once you start really writing down everything you spend, you're going to stop spending money. You know how I know? Because it is such a pain in the neck to track every cent you spend that if you in your head, you're going to be like, I'm just going to spend less because I don't want to spend that much time on this.
Do you take any, I've heard of this envelope method where you sort of take you say, I'm going to spend $100 in groceries, and then you take the cash out and put it in an envelope, and then when there's no more money in the envelope, then you have to wait till next month?
Yeah, a lot of people do that very successfully. I think you don't even know how much you spend on groceries in a month.
Nope.
So you don't know if it's $100 a week or $100 a month that you need to spend.
Right.
So, here's what I would do. Get online this afternoon at Mint.com. Holiday weekend, you guys are probably off tomorrow. Get all your information listed in there. Start keeping track of all your expenses. Take a look at your checkbook and your credit card accounts and all the rest for the last month. It's like, you know, it's a game. You and your wife can do it together. And what I want you to do this month, right, or the rest of this month, is I simply don't want you to buy anything new other than gas and food.
Sure.
So no, don't put a down payment on a trip. Don't buy any more clothes. Don't buy anything that isn't food or I mean, obviously insurance payments and all that kind of stuff, but new stuff. It's like food and gas.
Right.
And just get everything online and start to figure it out. Don't go to restaurants the rest of the month. Nothing. Nothing that you have to actually lay out more money for. And I think by February 1st, you're going to start to get a clearer look at where you are. And then in February, you can say, well, I'm going to spend, we spend an average of $200 a month on groceries. I'm going to put $200 in an envelope, and that's all we're going to spend this month. Some people don't need that discipline. Maybe you guys do. But until you know how the money's going out, there's no way to make an estimation of what you should be putting in that envelope. So I don't want to set you up for failure. I want to set you up for success. Call me back in 2 weeks and let me know what's happening. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. When we come back, we're doing our prize pack, so stay tuned to News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
26 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to do our prize pack right now. The prize value, $267 for the WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack. It includes a pair of tickets to the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra's concert featuring Mahler Symphony No. 2 on January 26th at Atlanta Symphony Hall, a $25 gift certificate to the Lakewood 400 Antique Market happening January 20th through the 22nd, 1 week free of indoor parking, courtesy of Peachy Airport Parking, and a pair of tickets to the Fifth Third Bank, Broadway in Atlanta's presentation of Billy Elliot, March 13th through the 18th at the Fox Theater. Terrific prize pack. That value, $267. We're going to give it away to the fifth caller to our prize pack line, folks. 404-741-0750. That number again, 404-741-0750. Be nice to Fred. He's the one who's going to take your call. Good luck. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. When we come back, we've got a whole slate of questions to get through. Stay tuned for that and more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Wake up, blush out, I struggle to memorize.
36 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. Thanks for joining us here. Congratulations to Thomas. He was the winner of our prize pack. Hope you enjoy that Mahler Symphony. It's really a beautiful one. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to sign up for Twitter, at glink. Happy to chat with you there as well. We're pretty active on Twitter, StumbleUpon, Dig, the Equifax Finance blog. If you haven't checked that out, it's equifax.com, and just click on Finance Blog at the top. You'll find amazing information from real professionals in the tax, insurance, investing, and we have a new category that we're working on that's going to come out in the next few weeks called Family Money Areas. All kinds of great information for you and your family. You can find it at Equifax.com, or you can just go to ThinkLink, my website, thinkglink.com. Sign up for the free weekly newsletter. We point you to the Equifax Finance blog and all of my work on MoneyWatch.com every week. 404-872-0750. Patricia joins us on the line from Ellenwood. Hey, Patricia.
Hi. How you doing, Elise?
I'm good. How are you?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
What I wanted to ask, I have a dilemma here. I have two homes, and neither one is paid for. But what happened, I was renting out the older home, and I live in the new home. And now I can't get any renters because I have to have the amount of rent that I owe, you know, every month on it, and it's hard to get anyone to rent it.
Okay, so you can't get anybody to rent it, and you're falling behind in that payment.
Right. Well, I hadn't fell behind yet, but it's, like, really hard for me to keep both house notes up.
Okay. And
I tried to get the making home affordable.
Uh-huh.
But I couldn't do that because I have PMI on
okay.
home. So I can't get refinanced. And I'm paying a little over $1,000 a month for that home.
And how far underwater are you on that new, on the old home?
Well, right now the value of it is like about $48,000.
Yep.
And, you know, with everything being like it is right now. But, so I'm like way under.
Okay.
And I'm not really sure what to do about the situation.
Well, okay. So you're going to have two choices. You can keep paying this mortgage and drive yourself into bankruptcy, and then you'll stop paying the mortgage.
Right. That's what's going to happen because I can't afford to.
Right. Or you can just stop paying the mortgage. Now, here's a problem that I'm worried about. How much is your loan on this property?
It's about $105,000.
Okay. So you're about $60,000 plus or minus a little bit underwater.
Right.
If you let this property go back to the bank and they sell it,
mm-hmm.
and let's say, or you sell it as a short sale, and let's say the bank agrees to the purchase price and you just end up at, like, say, $60,000 or $65,000 short,
mm-hmm.
the bank will probably forgive that, but the IRS will not because it's not a primary property. It's a rental property.
Mm-hmm.
So what will happen is the following April 15th, you're going to owe tax on $60,000.
Oh, my God.
Even though it's not real money.
Mm-hmm.
It's phantom income, but it's income to the IRS. Now, if you lived in that house as a primary residence and did a short sale,
mm-hmm.
then it would be considered a primary residence, and you would not owe taxes on it.
Okay.
So one possibility is you rent your new house and you move back to the old house,
mm-hmm.
and it becomes your primary property again. You go through the short sale process. You get rid of the property some one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you do a foreclosure and it's a primary residence, you can then move to the other property. But you need some qualified legal help here.
Right.
So I suggest you find a real estate attorney who actually understands these issues. You can do that through the Atlanta Bar Association.
Okay.
They'll ask for the head of the real estate committee. Tell that person your situation. They will, you know, give you some referrals to an attorney different attorneys who might be able to help out.
Okay.
So you have to start thinking in creative ways, and you also have to realize that this kind of thing does cause a taxable event. Now, it will also ruin your credit for a while.
I know.
But it is what it is.
It is what it is, exactly.
I mean,
that's what I was thinking. I was like, well, what can I do? Because I didn't want to, like, walk away from the loan, but I can't afford it, so.
Right, and you can't get anybody to rent it.
Not at the price that I need.
Right.
You know, because, you know, well, I guess, I don't know, but I can't get anyone to rent it, so.
Okay, well, would your new house be more rentable?
More than likely, yes.
Okay, so maybe what you want to do is rent that property out,
mm-hmm.
move to this property and start that whole short sale or foreclosure process. And when you're done with it, you've moved out again, you can move back into the other house.
Okay, so how soon can I do that?
Pretty soon.
Oh, okay.
But I want you to get some legal advice first. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't want you to go without any sort of legal advice because you need to understand what your options are.
Right.
And what the liabilities are.
Okay. So I need to get a real estate lawyer.
Right. And I would, again, the Atlanta Bar Association or the Georgia Bar Association, both of them have real estate committees.
Okay.
You want to talk to the head of the real estate committee.
Okay.
Because they're the ones who really know who's doing all this kind of stuff. Ask for some referrals and then start interviewing lawyers.
Okay.
All right?
All right, then. Thank you so much for your help.
You're welcome, Patricia. Thanks for listening to the show. 42 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Looking at the wrong number here. 404-872-0750. Back to the phones. Letty Jane joins us on the line. Hi, Letty Jane.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I have, I'm on Social Security.
Uh-huh.
I have a home in Georgia that I bought, and I have a home in Alabama that is paid for, and I rent it, and it pays for the note on this house.
Okay.
In Georgia. I have a 4 3/4 mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, do you know anybody, any company that would refinance that to someone that's on Social Security and get a lower interest rate?
So the home in Georgia that you live in is the one that has the loan on it, right? And
yes,
it's 4.75%. How long have you had that loan?
About 4 years.
Okay,
no,
and are
3 years.
Okay, and are you underwater? Is your house worth less than the mortgage balance?
Oh yes.
How much?
No.
You have equity in the house.
Yes, I bought the house for $176,000, refinance, and I can't get though what I paid for the house.
Okay, how much is the house worth?
It's worth about what I paid for, $175,000.
Okay, and how much is the mortgage?
$147,000.
Okay, so you do have equity in the property.
Yeah.
You could refinance. Being on Social Security is not a problem. You know, I don't know, how much Social Security do you get every month?
Not much.
Okay, that's the problem.
Yeah.
So if you were on Social Security, let me finish, and you got $3,000 a month, and you were looking to refinance a mortgage of $150,000, let's just make it up that those numbers work.
Right.
You wouldn't have a problem that it's Social Security. In fact, that's guaranteed the rest of your life. So
right.
Lenders find that fine. But if you're only getting $800 and you're trying to refinance a $147,000 mortgage, those numbers don't work.
So, but also I have a 90,000 Roth IRA.
Uh huh.
And that wouldn't influence anything.
Well, do you use that to live off of?
No, I try my darndest.
Okay, so the idea being that you would withdraw some of that money and maybe refinance, I don't know, like a $50,000 or $60,000 mortgage.
Okay.
What I don't understand is what you're trying to accomplish.
I want to get my note lower.
Why?
Because it's living hand to mouth with my budget.
But you have $90,000 in a Roth IRA.
But I'm not that old, and I have to rely on that when I'm old.
How old are you?
I'm 65.
Okay, so let's just think about this, Letty, okay? Let's just say you take the $90,000 out and you buy down the loan to $50,000 or $60,000.
Okay.
Okay, and what's your mortgage payment now?
$10,014.
Okay. Let's say it drops it to $600 a month. Your whole future reliance on that $90,000 is gone. Right?
Right?
It's not there anymore. Now it's in your mortgage. Okay? So
okay.
You can do that, but you've now taken all of your cash and done away with it.
Right.
So when you tell me I need that money to live on in the future, all you're doing is buying yourself, let's just say, and I'm making this up, $400 a month.
Uh-huh.
You still have taxes, you still have insurance, you still have to do the upkeep of the house. And you don't have any more cash. And that $400 in savings is going to stay steady, whereas all your other costs are going to go up. So in 10 more years, you're going to be in trouble again.
Oh.
Okay? So that's what I'm getting at. So, on the other hand, if you take $400 a month out of that $90,000, right? It's about $4,800 a year, or let's just call it $5,000 a year. Now, you can do that for a long time, like 18 to 20 years.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And you're just going to make your life a little bit easier, but you still have that principal. So if you decide to sell that property, you still have your $90,000, and now you've got some cash coming in from the sale, and you maybe should even think about that at some point. And maybe you won't want to live there in 20 years.
I don't.
Right.
I really want to leave.
Okay. So if you really want to leave, you might want to just sell the place.
I thought about that.
So there's just, what I'm trying to do is say, don't take your $90,000 that you're telling me is your valuable cash for your future and use it all up to buy down a mortgage on a place you don't even want to be.
Right.
Because you know what? It's going to cost you like $5,000 to refinance.
Okay. I got you.
And for what? To get your mortgage from 4.75 to 4%? You're not going to save very much.
Okay.
So all in all, I just want you to think about these numbers in a little bit of a different way. You have other options.
Yeah. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome.
And you have a great evening.
I will. You do the same. 47 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Greg joins us on the line. Hi, Greg.
Hey, how are you doing, Elise?
Good. What's going on in Snellville today?
Oh, nothing. I actually had a couple questions regarding my home.
Okay.
I refinanced. We've been in our house about 11 years. I refinanced a while back, actually in 2005, so we could get a minivan for our growing family. And obviously since that time, the housing value has gone down. So what I'm trying to do is refinance. However, I'm about $10,000 underwater in terms of our home.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know, I just heard you talking about HARP, but I wanted some options in terms of, even if that is possible, refinancing, even though you are underwater. At first, I didn't even know that was a possibility, but obviously I heard some information that might be of use for us.
Okay, so you need to go to the same website I sent that other caller to, makinghomeaffordable.gov.
Right.
And you also need to call the Homeowners Hope Hotline.
Okay.
888-995-HOPE.
Okay.
Depending on the kind of loan you have, if you had a 30-year fixed that was owned by Fannie and Freddie, you might be able to do it.
Okay, and I know ours is a 575 ARM, and so that's what really what I wanted to refinance and get into a 30-year fixed with the 575 ARM or a 5.75 interest rate on an ARM. We're currently year-to-year, so obviously it I think it goes by LIBOR or something like that.
Okay, well, your interest rate could drop down.
Okay.
So that would be okay.
Yeah, and unfortunately with ours, it does not drop on a yearly basis. It stays at the minimum, but it can go up, and I'm just concerned about if it does go up in the future. So I'm trying to get on a 30-year fix, if at all possible.
I think that would be a great idea. But yeah. Your loan, to qualify for HARP, your loan has to be owned or guaranteed by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Okay.
You can go to their websites and look up your loan number.
Okay.
For Fannie Mae, it's fanniemae.com/loan lookup.
Okay.
For Freddie Mac, it's freddiemac.com/mymortgage.
Well, that's pretty cool. I didn't know that you could actually go in and put in your loan number and check
it
out.
Yeah, it'll just pop right up. And then you can also call Fannie Mae. It's 1-800-7-FANNIE, F-A-N-N-I-E. For Freddie Mac, it's 1-800-FREDDIE.
Okay, and if for some reason it wasn't guaranteed by either one of those organizations,
then
is there another option?
Well, then you won't qualify. So then you have to figure out if you can come up with enough cash to qualify for an FHA loan.
Gotcha.
So you need to do some homework before I can figure out any, you know, whether or not you would actually qualify or not qualify. And I think that you'll find this website to be hugely helpful. And just again, it's makinghomeaffordable.gov. 50 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glenk Show. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more answers to your questions next on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elyse Glenk is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Had some trouble with herself.
55 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glenk Show on News Talk WSB, 404-872-0750, online all the time. ThinkGlenk.com. So glad you could join us today. Really good show. Lots of great questions. Dan joins us on the line now from Cartersville. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Elyse. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you.
Good.
I think I have a simple question. I'm in the process of shredding about 40 years worth of financial documents that I've kept forever.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. And they need to get rid of a lot of it. And the question specifically is, I'm in my fourth house, which is paid for.
Uh-huh.
Do I need to keep any of the paperwork associated with the three previous homes that I bought and sold?
I can't see a reason why, unless you sold the third one or the second and third ones in the last 7 years.
I sold the third house I was in 6 years ago. I've been in this house for 6 years.
So I think I'd keep that one around. The reason is the IRS, if they suspect fraud on your tax return, no idea why that would happen, but let's just say they do. They have the right to go back 7 years, I think.
Okay.
So anything beyond that would not be of interest. One thing you could do is if you wanted to get rid of the documents, you could simply scan them in.
Right.
Or scan in the relevant ones and just keep a digital copy of it. As we go forward, more and more people will be scanning these documents and shredding all the paper, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. But in regard to that particular home, all I would really need to keep would be, what, the closing documents and offer?
The release of the mortgage would be good. The closing documents would be fine. You won't need to keep, unless you had some sort of extraordinary expenses that resulted from, let's say, an insurance claim, you probably don't have to keep that. So You're just trying to keep anything that the IRS might come back and say, you took a deduction for this and we want to understand what you did.
Yeah, I think I was pretty good on the tax return. Of course, now, if I'm still right, I don't have to worry about what it used to be the old way where you had to pay capital gains on your last house if it was of less value than your previous home.
No, that will only be factored on this. You know, that went away like 12 years ago.
Yeah, right.
So,
exactly.
You know, you've already paid the taxes on that property. You know, just showing what the sales price was, that would be, you know, if you ended up paying tax on it or not. And then this property going forward, you'd want to keep everything.
Okay.
But I think you can get rid of it. And I'm in favor, really, of getting rid of all that stuff. I don't think it's necessarily such a great thing to keep, you know, loads and loads of paper. And every year, Sam prunes his law files. He's required to keep them like 10 or 11 years. He hasn't had clients come back in 11 years. He gets rid of those as well. He did have a case where somebody came back like after 18 years and had a question about his file and said, Sam said, I'm sorry, but, you know, the law requires me to keep it for a certain amount of time, 10, 11 years. We're done now, so I don't have it. But again, digital copies are always the safe way to go. And then the rest you can shred. It sounds like you're paring down, and that is a great thing. It's 58 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glenk Show. Adam Goldfein is next. Thank you so much for joining us today. My thanks to Fred and to Shannon for an amazing job making the show sound as fabulous as it does. Crystal was off today, and we're sending her good wishes. Her dad's feeling a little under the weather. All right, so my work here is done. The music has started, and that means it's time for me to go out and enjoy the rest of my weekend. Happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day. I hope that you have a peaceful holiday, and that's, I think, what Dr. King would have wanted. Enjoy it, and have a great week. I'll speak to you again next week. See you then. Ring my phone. Ring-a-ling-a-ling.